Welcome to the LDN Radio Show, brought to you by the LDN Research Trust. I'm your host, Linda Elsiegood. I have an exciting lineup of guest speakers who are LDN experts in their field. We will be discussing low-dose naltrexone and its many uses in autoimmune diseases, cancers, etc. Thank you for joining us. This show is sponsored by Dixon's Chemist, who are the experts in LDN and associated treatments in the UK. Dixon's Chemist are the most cost-effective for LDN in all forms within the UK and Europe, maintaining safety standards far in excess of what is required. Why would you choose to get your LDN from anywhere else? Call 0141 404 6545 today to speak to their LDN experts. Today my guest is pharmacist Stephen Dixon, who, as you probably all know if you're in the UK or in Europe even, he has been working with LDN since, was it 2006 or 2005, Stephen?
2005.
Yeah. So when you started, how many patients would you say were using LDN at that time?
I think at the time we had a number of patients who came from a private medical clinic that was solely working with MS patients. So it probably started off in the tens and quickly became the hundreds. As we know, it's now in the tens of thousands.
Mm-hmm. And it's come on amazingly, hasn't it? And what, in your experience, would you say the outcomes have been for patients with using LDN, not just for autoimmune diseases, but cancers, pain, etc.?
It's a very wide topic. Starting off, we were very sceptical about this, about LDN. This is going back a long time now. But from our perspective, we were really looking initially just at MS patients. And it wasn't long, actually, until after we started using it. Maybe about, I think about a year after we'd started dispensing it in large quantities, reasonably large quantities, until we started to notice the difference that some patients received from it. Where really all standard therapies had failed. And do bear in mind that we were involved in all sorts of other unusual MS treatments at the time as well. LDN stood out as something which seemed to have a consistent response in MS patients for at least half to more than that, and seemed to get stabilisation of disease and an improvement in some of their symptoms. But as we all know, MS is such a wide range of symptoms, it's very hard to quantify specifically. One of the first things we started asking people and looking at years ago was bladder control in MS. And that was, there was a very small sort of study done in that, and it seemed to show that the number of times people needed to relieve themselves overnight improved. And that was way back in sort of 2005 to 2008. So that certainly gave us an awful lot of food for thought and a bit of confidence that LDN was definitely doing something. Now, we've come a long, long way from then because of all of the different bits of research that have been done and all the clinicians who've tried it in conditions. As you said, everything from, MS to Hashimoto's disease, and most recently things like cancer. The differences are, in some people, are quite remarkable. And what we've been very lucky with in the last few years is that we've had some of the researchers who are doing the primary work on LDN able to start to elucidate really how that's working and what it does. So from a personal perspective, we have patients who LDN does absolutely nothing for, and we don't know, but we have chronic fatigue patients, for example, who have been debilitated, unable to go to work for years at some times, who have a very short time after starting LDN are right back to 75% of normal and back at work, and they report that the only thing they've done differently in that time is LDN. Now, as we know, it doesn't seem to work for everybody, and LDN doesn't seem to be the panacea to get everyone back to 100% of where they were. But certainly looking at the anti-inflammatory autoimmune effects that have been sort of looked at carefully over the last few years, it certainly points us in a very clear direction of how LDN is helping these patients.
I mean, from prescribers that I've interviewed, I would say virtually all of them have said that it's helped 80% plus of patients that they've prescribed LDN for, ranging for, I was just trying to think how many conditions we've got now. Was it 240 conditions, something like that? And
It's so many, it's hard to keep track.
I know, I've been sent another one this week, which was really interesting. So although we know that no drug works for everybody, and even those people that LDN works for, as you said, they can't get back to where they were 100%. But it is certainly something worth trying, isn't it, if you have a condition that LDN could possibly help?
I certainly think that if you're a patient who has one of these conditions where all other treatments have failed or have been suboptimal, and you've done the research yourself, I mean, going to the NASM LDN research website, for example, do you know, if it's something that you personally think you want to try, then I don't think any obstacles should be put in your way to do so. So that's certainly what we've been focusing on for the last number of years, is just to get a stable and safe supply chain that gets the correct thing to the correct person and with the least amount of hassle, in the safest possible way. And that's one of our concerns over the last 2 years has been people buying things on the internet. So people buying LDN capsules from Amazon or eBay. And I was looking yesterday and there are still naltrexone capsules listed on eBay, which is, you know, completely terrifying. And, you know, there are drug interactions, there are problems, and there are things you do need to worry about in some people. So certainly that's a concern. But we are striving, has been, to make sure that the supply to patients in the UK and the EU was in a stable and sensible way.
And the other thing that isn't recommended is making your own LDN. I mean, so many people say, oh, I can, again, buy 50 milligram tablets off the internet and mix my own LDN, and it's going to be pennies rather than pounds. Now, can you explain the potential problems people could have by making it themselves?
Well, I can give you a very good example, because the whole of the European Union has signed up to something called the Falsified Medicines Directive. And starting from February of next year, every single medicine in the whole of the European Union and the UK, and it will continue after Brexit, has to have a specific 3D barcode or 2D barcode, which contains information about where that was made, the exact specific pack, and the whole journey that package has had through the system. So right from the manufacturer, wherever that is in the world, right to the patient, it's been barcode scanned for the entire journey. And the reason why this has been done, and why the government are investing millions upon millions into this, is this problem of falsified medicines. Most of the things that you can buy on the internet, most of the medicines you will buy on the internet that don't require a prescription, are coming from non-regulated countries. And in fact, most of those medicines, not only are they coming from non-regulated countries, you know, the odds are they're not real. And this is something we see all the time, is that people have bought things that are not only potentially not exactly what they're supposed to be, but maybe contain other things that are harmful. And this is coming from someone, if someone's unscrupulous enough to sell your prescription medicine over the internet without any sort of consultation or any legal documentation, then they'll be willing to sell you anything. So that I'm fully aware that there must be people who have been lucky enough to buy naltrexone tablets and have been lucky enough to dilute them and have not had anything bad happen. But I would say that from each time you buy it, you're taking your life in your hands, because you don't know what it is. It might come in the same packaging, but it's very easy to photograph a box and photocopy it and create artificial packaging. You can do it in 24 hours. Again, it's very easy to buy tableting machines. There are all sorts of herbal medicine and, you know, supplement companies have spare time on their tableting machines. It's quite easy to have tablets of some sort that look right made as well. The whole thing, our concern about that is it's the supply chain. You know, also the stability of the end solution. If you were to do it, even if you did get the right thing, we have concerns about that, because we know from experience in using tablets that different excipients in those tablets have a different effect on how soluble and how stable the product is. And we've had 10 years of experience of that. So We would never recommend that anybody does it themselves just to save a couple of pounds. It's not worth it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the supply chain that you use, you make sure it's high quality product that you use, that it's made compliantly and it's fully tested. I mean, that ticks all the boxes, doesn't it, to know that...
That's the thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's when we had a recent inspection by a regulator, and I think they were quite surprised by the length that we go to make sure that all of these medicines, I mean, not surprised, but, you know, we've gone way above and beyond what is expected from the law, mm-hmm. because there are so many risks in this volume of supplying unlicensed specials. So from our perspective, we have even gone as far as to do a stability trial in our liquid formulation, which shows that we can have unopened a 12-month expiry. And that gives us great confidence that what we're doing is right and is going to work in the long term. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of... In a recent case, we had someone who went to just a local pharmacy just right beside them, who ordered LDN capsules from wherever it was that they get them from, and the capsules turned up with basically nothing in them. We sent them off for testing, and there wasn't enough material inside the capsules to have to actually be able to test it, to find out if it was what it was supposed to be. It's still, the UK is far better than other countries, generally, in this sort of way. Certainly in the EU, the regulation is tighter than you get in sort of other parts of Eurasia. But from our perspective, supply chain is key. You want to make sure that the thing you're getting each time is the same as the thing you got last time. Otherwise, you won't know whether it works. Mm-hmm.
But also, if people were to mix their own, I mean, how dangerous is that, as in bugs or germs growing in it with you constantly opening it, closing it, and people think that, you know, I only take point whatever of LDN, and this 150 milligram tablet is going to last me a month. What would you say to somebody who wanted to store and keep opening the LDN daily for a month in the fridge, in water?
There are a few problems. The first problem, I would say, is that some of the recipes that I've seen online posted in these forums call for distilled or deionized water. Now, if you do that to water and you take the ions out of it, number one, the naltrexone molecule actually can't dissolve because it needs ionic components within the water in order for the naltrexone to come out of the powder. So that's the first problem. If you follow some of the formulas we've seen online, actually it won't work. You won't be able to dissolve the naltrexone out of the material. Secondly, if you're just doing it in water, there are components of these tablets that you're buying, even if you are buying the right thing, even if by some chance you've happened upon the correct medicine, that won't correctly dissolve in water, and they will potentially adsorb some of the naltrexone molecule onto them. So that's the first two problems, is that, you know, you might not be able to get it to dissolve if you're following the formula, and actually even then you're unlikely to be able to create a solution that's going to be stable all the way through. But then you have the problem, as you so correctly said there, of opening it every day, exposing it to air, exposing it to whatever happened when you put the syringe in or you poured some out into a spoon, and the bacteria going back into the water. Now, you wouldn't open a carton of orange juice and then open it every day and keep it for a month and expect it to be good at the end. It's exactly the same with this. You wouldn't expect even a bottle of Diet Coke or something to be good after a month. And then it's the same thing with this. If you make that with one tablet, and you open it every day, and you introduce bacteria from the air or from the syringe or from the spoon, it's not necessarily going to be terribly safe by the end of the month, and or even vaguely what it was, because the bacteria were broken down in the drug. Mm-hmm. I don't think people really think it through. You see a lot of posts on forums where people think this, you know, think things are a great idea, but they haven't quite thought through the whole sort of the implications. And then that's not really their job to do that. That's why we have pharmacists and doctors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I know that you are always looking into other things that people can take alongside of LDN. Now, you have had some interesting different medications that could be used alongside of LDN to help with, say, MS over the last couple of years. So, you know, if people wanted to introduce something else that is also alternative,
potentially
different, beneficial.
Potentially
I don't know what to call it. Okay, what is it that you, as a pharmacy, are telling people that, you know, potentially might work for them and that works well with LDN?
There are three things. I mean, as you said, there have been quite a number of things come and gone, and these tend to come from experience at the LDN Research Trust conferences. So a couple of years ago, one of the most interesting things I found was something called low-dose dextromethorphan. We call it LDXM. It seems to work by blocking a different inflammatory pathway to LDN. Now, I know that I think it's Jared Younger is doing research into that at the moment. So we have quite a number of patients who are on that who have experienced some additional benefit on top of the LDN, which I found that really very interesting. Because again, it's a molecule which works differently at high dose to small dose. The second thing, which is more specific to remyelination diseases like MS, is something called clemastine. Excuse me. So, and clemastine is a really old-fashioned antihistamine which had fallen out of use completely. And there was a study published in the British Medical Journal showing that you were able to demonstrate remyelination after treatment with clemastine, using it in the animal model. Now, this is something which no drug, not even any of the MS drugs which are licensed, have been able to show. So this was incredibly interesting to us. And in fact, the results we've had from a number of patients who have started clemastine with us as well as LDN or instead of LDN, if LDN didn't work, have been absolutely remarkable. There have been patients who have gained full control of limbs that they haven't had for a long time. There have been people whose optic neuritis, that's the inflammatory marker for the eye, have improved remarkably. So that's been quite something that we found very interesting, along with or instead of LDN. But I think the buzzword right now are the cannabinoids. As you probably, if this is airing in the UK or Canada, then everybody's going to know that that cannabis is a hot topic. Now, what probably people don't know is that we have actually been using cannabinoids for about 10 years in various ways in our patients. And that's been something we've got a lot of experience of. In patients with LDN, and very specifically with patients who have spasticity or pain, for a long time now, we've been able to prescribe them something called Sativex. And the problem with Sativex, which is a licensed product used for MS, is that the NHS doesn't tend to refund it in a great number of areas, with the exception of Wales, for some reason. And Sativex seems to have a reasonably beneficial profile when mixed with LDN in patients who have spasticity or pain related to MS. Now, when we started looking at how that could work and what it was doing, it became very obvious that, you know, probably the THC component wasn't all that important. And in fact, the very expensive cost of Sativex probably wasn't necessary because there were cannabinoids available in the UK in the form of certain types of CBD oil that potentially could have some benefit. So about 18 months ago now, we started working with a manufacturer in the UK to bring their product from a food supplement sort of standard up to something which is prescribable so that our prescribers are able to sensibly dose patients with cannabinoids. And quite often, those patients are able to derive quite their benefits quite quickly. And it tends to be in mood, it tends to be in feelings of anxiety, especially patients like chronic fatigue patients, it seems to be in general aches and pains are improved, sleep quality seems to be improved. And we can see that quite remarkably in some patients who are on high doses of painkillers. For example, you'll probably be aware that a lot of people come to us looking for LDN who are not suitable for LDN. because they are taking painkillers containing morphine four times a day, or they're taking a lot of morphine. So what has happened recently is that to try and get the patients off of those medications so that they're able to try LDN, our prescribers have been using cannabinoids in the form of the CBD. And it seems to be quite remarkable in a number of people, well, a great number of people now actually, have been able to reduce the painkillers and then be able to start LDN. Now, that's not to talk about ultra-low-dose LDN that we're just getting into now. I think that's probably a topic for another day. But the growth in cannabinoids in the last 6 months has been absolutely remarkable. And we've been able to get products that are high quality, that are pharmaceutical grade, or close, as close to can be done with a food supplement, with for anything from 20 to sort of £60, and that's a dramatic improvement over the £400 for the Sativex. So it's opened up to a lot of people who couldn't take it before, and again, I wouldn't say it works for everybody, and it seems to work in some patients very well to help with pain, but what we're seeing a growth in right now, especially with a trial that was done, I think it was about 8 months ago, reported, we're seeing cannabinoids being used in certain ways along with LDN in certain types of cancer. The most common one that seems to get a response are things like glioma, and that's a brain cancer, and the multiple myelomas and the certain types of skin cancer seem to have a response, and that seems to be repeatable across a large number of people who are with us well past when we would have expected them to have been around. And I'm not saying cannabis cures cancer by any means, because I don't believe it does, but I think it's part of the overall arsenal that can be used as LDN in order to try and maintain cannabis, cancer as a chronic disease rather than an acute disease.
And you were saying about the cannabinoids being prescribed by your prescribers. Is it like LDN where the doctors can prescribe it on the NHS if they choose, but most people end up paying for it themselves? With the CBD, if a doctor prescribes it, do you have to pay for it, or can you get it on the NHS?
Sorry, my dog's barking and that's home at this time of the day. So basically, there's currently a significant issue with this because of the way the law has been changed in the UK. So basically what has happened is that because of the publicity about the children who were looking for medical marijuana for their epilepsy, the government sort of have rushed through some legislation to allow for medical cannabinoids to be prescribed in the NHS in very specific circumstances. Now, that requires a specialist to go to their area drug and therapeutics committee and to approach them with a specific individual case before any prescribing events happen. So it really doesn't help people, any of our patient group, because it's highly unlikely that they're going to find a consultant who's willing to go to those sort of lengths just to prescribe them something on the NHS. The other problem is that the way the legislation has been framed, in order for it to be prescribable on the NHS, it has to have been manufactured as a cannabinoid for medical use. Now, as we stand right now, the only cannabinoids manufactured for medical use is Sativex. And the Sativex is not optimal for a great number of conditions because it contains the THC at a 50-50 ratio. So you're probably looking for the majority of the conditions of the patients that we deal with. We're just probably looking for pure CBD or pure CBD along with a touch of THC, so maybe 10, 20, 30%. And that's the experience that's sort of coming out of the literature over time. The other problem that is absolutely blindingly obvious, which to all the prescribers, is that any cannabinoid that's made for medical use, be it the same as the food supplement or not, has been scheduled as a Schedule 2 controlled drug. So that makes it extremely difficult to obtain on the NHS or privately compared to buying a food supplement, which is essentially the same thing. And that's what we've been doing in recent times, is actually bringing these food supplement producers. The specific company we're working with is one called Cannabidol, and they have invested millions of pounds in equipment that's able to basically make a pharma-grade cannabinoid for us, which is basically the same as you would get on an NHS prescription. But if it was made for an NHS prescription, it would be a Schedule 2 controlled drug, whereas actually you can just buy it if it's made as a food supplement. And so the law is such a mess.
But just think how much the government would save on not prescribing Sativex in all cases and using a cannabis oil instead. You know,
the saving would be great if they would allow the prescribing of food supplements. Now, the issue is, so when you're coming to the private sector, like we are here, and one of our prescribers is prescribing you with a cannabis oil or a cannabis product, it may well be it's coming from a food supplement source. And that's fine, because coming from a food supplement source, the product, we have vetted how it's been manufactured and we've treated it to the same supply chain as we do LDN. So that means that we're very certain that what comes in the door and goes back out in prescription is correct. But what we've done in the process of that is we've tested a great number of things on the markets that you can buy. So cannabis oils that you can buy in Main Street health food shops or, you know, pharmacy chains, etc. And what we've discovered is that in the worst case, one of the cannabis oils contained absolutely no cannabis whatsoever, and we've reported that to the regulator and to the owners of that large group who were selling it. But also, there was one that was being sold on the high street that contained an extremely high amount of THC, which would have meant that the drug was actually that food supplement would be a Schedule 2 controlled drug. And actually, before law changed, it would have been a Schedule 1, and you could have been arrested for possessing it. So the supply chain that generates food supplements is not the same as the supply chain that generates medicines. So what we've had to do is to bring a food supplement supplier up to the standards that we would expect from medicines. And that's something which is ongoing, and we will continue to work with over the next 12 to 18 months, in the understanding that we'll be able to bring full medical products to market. However, in the same time, people at GW Pharma, who make Sativex, must be looking at, you know, medical cannabis products as well. So we've seen that they're looking at bringing out a cannabis oil. So you would hope that then that would be something made for medical use that could be prescribed in the NHS. However, I feel that we'll have the same problem with cost as we do with Sativex. And that's just one of the things that we have to deal with. Now, one of the good things is that NICE that's the National Institute of Clinical Excellence. Now, they are accepting input from a wide range of health professions, and they are currently looking at all of the evidence and looking at what conditions we could use cannabinoids for on the NHS, and they will report in about 18 months' time. So that will give us clearer information about that. But what we're doing in the meantime is we have banded together with a group of independent pharmacies up and down the country, and we're planning to run, to start by sort of maybe February, March of next year, to start running face-to-face cannabis clinics, because so that we're able to start gathering information and gathering data, so that patients are able to report back how well they're doing, so that we can help feed into this NICE report. So that hopefully is something that we're doing. And that's being led by one of the consultants who has done a lot of the primary research into LBN. So it's all very interesting.
Wow. And the good thing is that it does work very well alongside of LDN. So that's a plus-plus, isn't it?
Well, that's the thing. I think people trying cannabinoids on their own, I don't think they would get the same level of benefit. There seems to be a lot of synergy where LDN and you know, the cannabinoids work. And when you start to look at how they're working and what they're doing, you start to actually think, well, actually, that makes a bit of clinical sense. And it's going to be time before we get any high-quality data from this. But certainly, our general feelings starting now and looking at patients are very positive. The feedback has been very, very good. We just wish we could get some NHS prescribing going.
Yeah. Well, we've run out of time, but it's been wonderful to catch up with you. And I'm sure our listeners are really happy to see what else is happening in the LDN world. So we'll have you back next year and can't wait for the next update. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Linda.
This show is sponsored by Dixon's Chemist, who are the experts in LDN and associated treatments in the UK. Dixon's Chemist are the most cost-effective for LDN in all forms within the UK and Europe, maintaining safety standards far in excess of what is required. Why would you choose to get your LDN from anywhere else? Call 0141 404 6545 today to speak to their LDN experts. Any questions or comments you may have, please email me, Linda, L-I-N-D-A, at ldnrt.org. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciated your company. Until next time, stay safe and keep well.